Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you're out there in radio land and you'd like to talk to us, if you're out listening from across America, the telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And if you're listening here in the Central Coast, it's 464-8295. So give us a call. Right now, of course, we have coming on the line Jeff Nyquist. And we've had Jeff on a couple of times. We've actually introduced him to all three of our audiences. The evening audience, we had him on the afternoon program. And we've had him on the Saturday program talking about his book, The Origins of the Fourth World War. We had an opening this evening. I just got his new publication called The Final Phase. Fascinating, very, very well done, talking about some of the issues that are really facing us today, issues that you're not hearing about through the controlled media. And so I thought I'd have him on for an hour this evening, and then at the last minute, my regularly scheduled guest for this evening came down with a flu bug. And, of course, well, maybe it was just, I hate to say it was just as well. My regularly scheduled guest had written a book that was 937 pages. And I was only up to about 350, and I started reading last night, and I'd read. I was up at 5 this morning reading the book. I was up until midnight last night reading the book. And, I got to page 350, and then I got the call that the doctor had the flu, and so we'll get him rescheduled. I'll have a chance to read the whole book, but I'm really looking forward to that interview. I'm not going to tell you who it is with or who the guest is, but it'll be hopefully in a couple of weeks. It'll be one of the most exciting interviews you've ever had. But right now we have with Jeff Nyquist, and this is going to be an exciting interview, isn't it, Jeff?
Well, I hope so.
Okay, fine. Now, I was reading your November issue of The Final Phase, which is your newsletter, and you commented that, you commented that Russia had stopped exporting oil and stopped exporting gold. Now, this is rather unusual for a country that, you know, is just destitute financially, and they need that foreign exchange to sort of stabilize their economy, and yet they're holding back their oil exports, which is one of their major sources of income, and their gold exports. And you ask the question, why are they doing that? And I'll ask you that question. Why, faced with the financial problems that they have, why are they holding back exports?
Well, they've cut back on their, according to their own statistics, the story that came out in late October, that in the previous eight months they had cut back their oil exports by 26.6%, and that the Russian government was curtailing gold exports. They had put aside $500 million to purchase nearly half of the gold production that Russia had done this year, and they have been buying gold abroad. In fact, what's really odd is that they are minting gold coins and appear to be thinking about putting them into circulation.
You mean they're trying to get back to a solvent currency instead of the paper currency, the fiat currency, like we have?
Yeah, it's interesting. They're getting away from fiat money. In fact, in their oil industry, the oil ministry told the Russian oil companies to no longer deal in dollars, to only deal in rubles. And not only, it's interesting, there is a slight decline in Russian oil production, 1% over the last year, but they have been importing more oil from Iraq because Iraq can't export their oil to anyone else. So Russia has actually more oil than ever, and they're cutting back. So the question is, why are they doing this, as you just asked me? And I'll put it to your listeners this way. If you were going to get ready for war, particularly a nuclear war, there are a number of things you would do in preparation. First, you would put away hard money. You'd have your money not in paper money, in dollars. You'd have it in gold and silver. And you would want a large stockpile of fuel and food, and that's what you would personally do to prepare. You'd stockpile food and fuel, and you'd convert your assets to gold. And that's exactly what the Russian Federation appears to be doing right now.
Well, you know, one of the things that's sort of intriguing, if they certainly don't want to sell their gold and oil for dollars. And, of course, one thing that most people don't understand is that Russia and China could bring down the whole financial system of the West simply by refusing to pay back all these massive loans that they've taken out.
Well, they are attempting to bring down, I believe they have been attempting to bring down the financial situation of the West for the last 6 months. You know that that according to a January 9th AP story, Russia's out of Russia's 10 top banks, 5 of them are reported to be totally insolvent. I mean, this country is and these economic panics and collapses traced that we've suffered in the West have traced back to Russia. And I believe that ultimately, yes, there is some economic sabotage going on, and their economy doesn't work like a Western economy anyway. They can do things that we could never get away with.
And the other thing is, though, that you know, it's said that if the lender, pardon me, the borrower is beholden to the lender unless you borrowed enough money.
Yes.
And if you borrowed enough money, you really own the lender, because all you have to do is default, and then he goes into default. So he can't allow you to default. And if you do go into default, then he goes down.
Yeah, if you owe $1 billion, you're an important person. If you owe $1,000, you're nobody.
That's about my speed.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You know, I think that the communists are smart enough to realize that one of the great strengths of the United States is this phony baloney money system, but it's worked pretty well through the years, because people throughout the world have come to be dependent upon the American dollar. But what happens if the American dollar begins to crumble? What happens if people really want something of inherent value? What happens if they start turning to the European currency, which will have a gold backing? Or perhaps to the Russian currency, which, if they are accumulating gold throughout the world, and this is a great time to accumulate it because the prices are so low, maybe that's the way to go.
Well, I think that the thing that worries me is that when you put it all together, it looks like they're thinking maybe that the dollar is going to become worthless in a short order, because in a nuclear war, you see what happens to the value of the dollar the day after the dust settled.
And, of course, that's just like what happened in Hitler's Germany to the mark, you know, after the surrender. And, of course, the mark was worthless.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
In fact, in any country that, you know, is conquered or is involved in a confrontation, very often the currency simply is just wiped out, like the continental currency that was used during the Revolutionary War. And they had a phrase that was said, it isn't worth a continental, meaning it had absolutely no value. And the average American, with all of his money in the stock market and his IRA and his 401k plan, can't imagine what it would be like if suddenly he would wake up one day and find out that he had nothing of any value other than a promise from a now defunct investment company or bank.
Yeah, it's you know, if the dollar has value as fiat money only because people think it has value, and it is kind of a barometer that measures the economic optimism of the West, which has been riding high for decades. But if you are suddenly confronted with a nuclear crisis, which seems to be building now. Jiang Zemin last week gave a speech. This is the head of the People's Republic of China, gave a speech in which he told the Chinese army, that it had to be ready for nuclear war. This is a very striking.
Now, of course, we're not reading that in the United States. Where are you getting your information from, Jeff?
That was a news story last week that talked about the speech, the parts of the speech that were made public.
Okay. And so we know, for instance, that the Russians have actually been stockpiling massive amounts of wheat for many years, haven't they?
Yes. According to Richard Starr, they have 362 million metric tons in their nuclear bomb shelters and bunkers and the nuclear-proof towns.
And then, of course, they always tell us that our people are starving, we're facing famine, you've got to give us more wheat at reduced costs or lend us the money to buy your wheat. It'll be good for your farmers, though, because, you know, this will support the farm prices. But they're storing. Now, do we have any wheat stores?
Well, only in the silos from our harvesting. We have an infrastructure, kind of a pipeline infrastructure that feeds ourselves and the rest of the world, and there's large amounts in that because we had a record harvest. But we've been shipping a lot of it to Russia because Russia's claiming that they had a famine, which is an interesting claim. I'd want to see what the CIA actually, what their satellites are saying about it. I'm skeptical because there's been so much contradictory information about the Russian famine. I'm doubtful.
How long could our country, exist on our current grain supplies? Do you have any idea?
Depends on how many Americans are alive and eating. If you have a war situation where half the country is killed, you could probably get by.
For how long?
Well, probably with some starvation around the edges, you could the country could get by.
To a year till you had a new harvest.
Right.
But, of course, then you have to have the seed, you have to have the infrastructure to get the fertilizer and pesticides, and you have to have, infrastructure to get diesel for the tractors so that they can do the planting.
Yes, yeah, we have mechanized our agriculture, and we have an interdependent system, complex economic system that could be easily disrupted.
And, of course, you have to have the hybrid seeds. I think most of our corn now is hybrid. Most of that comes from South America. What happens if you couldn't get the hybrid seeds and other seeds in?
It's very interesting. The United States agricultural producers are going away from hybrid seeds this next planting season.
Are they really? Why is that?
It's a mystery. I wonder if someone in the government hasn't made a move on this, that there isn't a worry of a nuclear war and that they want the non-hybrid seeds out there. I don't know to what extent people in our government are worried about the same things I'm seeing. I mean, people have to be seeing some of these things.
Well, of course, the one thing is they don't want the American people to be concerned. Withholding this from the American people because the last thing they'd want was for our people to be concerned that our foreign policy is dedicated to helping those people who are dedicated to our destruction.
Yeah, our social system is based on economic optimism. And something like that could cause a panic, could cause markets to collapse, could cause economic destruction and mayhem. So you don't want to panic people. It's interesting. The Russians, just what happened just yesterday, I don't know if you heard about this, but the head of the the Russian Strategic Rocket Forces, General Vladimir Yakovlev, resigned. And three of his deputies resigned along with him.
Now, why was that?
They claimed it was an argument with another general there. His name is General Sokolov, the commander of the early warning service, that it was a personal dispute which had been blown up out of proportion by a dispute over the Topol-M, the deployment of the Topol-M missile, the new missile regiment they deployed last month.
Right, they deployed these 10 of these mobile missiles. Now, we have no comparable missiles in our armamentarium. We have not built any new missiles, and I don't know how long. The Russians are building new missiles all the time. I think we built one nuclear submarine in the last decade, and they built I don't know how many nuclear submarines. And for a country that's totally bankrupt and no longer is aggressive, and we won the Cold War, why are they in full military production for war?
Now, they're preparing for war.
And I think that's the thing that people have to understand, is that contrary to everything you're being told, the Soviets believe nuclear war is not only fightable, it's winnable.
Yes, they absolutely believe that, and that's why these four top nuclear generals resigning, it could be a deception, prefiguring the movement of their command post to a place where they can make their final preparations without being observed.
Now, for the listener out there who would like to challenge what I've just said about the Soviets feeling that the war is not only fightable but winnable, do you cover that? You cover that in your book, Fourth World War, don't you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, just to tell you a couple of things about nuclear nuclear radiation. There's two kinds of nuclear radiation from bombs. One is long-term and the other is short-term. A long-term fallout, the one that scares everyone, the stuff that stays around for thousands of years, it's very light. It would go all over the world, but here's the thing. The Australian government did a study on what the cancer rate in Australia would be from the long-term fallout. After a nuclear war, they determined that the fallout, that the cancer rate in Australia would actually go down after a nuclear, full-blown nuclear war. Of course, there would be some increase in leukemias and cancers from the fallout particles, but this would be way compensated for by a massive decrease in cancers because the exports of tobacco from the United States would be cut off.
Well, not only that, but as I mentioned, one of the other programs we did together, and for our listeners out there, I regularly attend meetings of the Doctors for Defense Preparedness. I suspect there are probably not more than 10 or 15 doctors from the entire nation that attend these meetings, but they have some of the world's top scientists there, which is one reason I go. And there's a man named Bernard Cohen, who's a well-known professor within scientific field, and he set out to show the dangers of radon in people's houses. Of course, it's a radioactive gas. Mm-hmm. And he did these studies. And, of course, as he began to put the information together, he found out that the higher the radon level, the lower the incidence of cancer and other diseases was. And he figured these figures, you know, umpteen thousand different ways. I mean, I sat there for not a thousand, but at least 40 different ways to try to disprove that his findings, and they were all consistent. If you had radon in your house, you did not have a higher incidence of cancer, contrary to what the controlled media wants you to know. Mm. And then they began talking about these studies that had been done in Japan on the survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Now, of course, if you got enough radiation initially, you got sick and you died. But for the people who were on the fringes and may have gotten just, you know, a mild amount of radiation, they live longer than their counterparts. Why? Because low-dose radiation appears to have a beneficial effect, and you're not hearing that, of course, because, of course, they're trying to scare the American people into the idea that, gee, we can't have a nuclear war, therefore we won't have any sort of missile defense, we won't have any sort of civilian defense system, we won't try to protect ourselves at all, because by not protecting ourselves, we can ensure there won't be a nuclear war. And,
right,
of course, what we're really ensuring is the destruction of America.
Yeah, unfortunately. There's so many weird things that the Russians are doing now. General Anatoly Kavishin claims that the Russians have halved their forces in the West, facing the West European countries. At the same time, we know that 300 combat units have been taken off the Chinese border. Where's the Russian army gone? If it's not facing China, if it's not facing the West.
Well, what we're hearing is, of course, they can't afford to feed them, you know, they're total disarray, they're demoralized.
Why not just disband them?
That's a good question. I mean, are we being deceived? Is this an example of the psychology or the psychological warfare that Sun Tzu described in his classic book, The Art of Warfare, written, I think, probably 300 or 400 years before Christ was born in Bethlehem? Where he said to fight and conquer in all of your battles is not supreme excellence. The supreme excellence consists of breaking the enemy's resistance without fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we're the enemy. And what was that other wonderful quotation he used about when you're weak? How does that go?
All warfare is based on deception. When you are close, you must seem far away. When you are strong, you must seem weak. Hold out baits to entice the enemy, feign disorder, and crush him.
Right. And, of course, that's like Manilovsky wrote so many years ago at the Lenin School of Political Warfare about war between the West and communism is inevitable. And so at some time in the future, why, we'll launch a gigantic peace offensive. There'll be electrifying overtures and unheard of concessions. And the West, the stupid and decadent, will rejoice.
Mm-hmm.
And when their guard is down, we'll crush them.
It looks like they're getting ready for something, and it may be a Middle East crisis. Specifically because perhaps you've heard that Kuwait has mobilized its on Iraq.
I mean, Kuwait's going to attack Iraq?
They've mobilized their army in facing it towards Iraq, and the United States has flown in F-16s, and I don't know if you noticed the story, but Secretary Cohen, when he was in Japan, said publicly that Saddam Hussein was acting in an agitated, distressed manner.
Well, is this simply another wag the dog affair with Bill? Another Operation Free Willy?
Yeah. We don't know, except that it appears that the Kuwaitis have intelligence indicating one of their leaders made a statement saying that it looks like Saddam may do something something very catastrophic, like his invasion of Kuwait. And something is going on. Something is going to happen pretty soon.
Now, what's he going to do? Is he going to attack America?
Well, I think that the suggestion is that he's going to either there's going to be a large terrorist event, or there's going to be he's going to use missiles and biological or chemical weapons on some target, whether that's Israel or Kuwait. I don't know.
Well, you know, one of the most distressing things for me, Jeff, is the way they just totally mislead the American people. And we hear all this talk about, oh my goodness, Saddam Hussein, this wicked, most wicked man in the world. And of course, I'm not saying he's not one of the most wicked men in the world, but most people have forgotten that we financed Saddam Hussein all during the 1980s. And we have a wonderful book. I don't know if you know Seymour Hersh's wonderful little book entitled Against All Enemies, but in this book he talks about how we gave Saddam the chemicals to build his chemical warfare material. We were sending him the cultures for his bacteriological warfare right up until January of 1991, when the Gulf War was already underway. But the average American doesn't understand that. They think that the real enemy is Saddam Hussein. And the question is, why were we doing that? And then, I don't know if you've seen these reports about fact that Fidel Castro has spent some $2 billion building up a bacteriological and chemical warfare plant down in Cuba.
Uh-huh.
And, if we're really concerned about the danger of bacteriological and chemical warfare, why aren't we concerned about Fidel Castro? He's certainly not spending $2 billion so that he can attack Haiti or Jamaica.
Oh, no, although I wouldn't put that past him either. Fidel Castro is a very dangerous man. You remember the Cuban Missile Crisis, the fact that he allowed the Russians to come in with missiles. I mean, and how crazy that was. At the time, these people, they're capable of things that we in America can hardly imagine. These totalitarian regimes, these people are murderers. They're basically criminals in the way they treat people. They murder people, they torture people, they imprison people who are basically innocent of doing anything wrong, and violate every understanding of common decency that we have here in America. And yet they are tolerated by the Western government. Some of them even recognize Castro. We don't yet officially recognize him, thank goodness.
But it's quite obvious that Bill Clinton is going to extend recognition and lift some of the embargo.
Yeah,
and Bill Clinton, Comrade Clinton, is doing everything he can to lift the embargo that we've had on Castro for such a long period of time.
Well, he did it with Vietnam. They were able to get Vietnam to be recognized.
Sure.
And, of course, Ron Brown went over there, and they stuffed Ron Brown's pockets full of cash and fixed the deal.
And not only that, but, of course, Bill Clinton has been allowing sensitive military technology to be shipped over to the Chinese communists,
yeah,
which then give them the ability to MIRV their missiles and target them accurately on our towns, which I would think that somebody would be suggesting that instead of talking about Monica Lewinsky, maybe we ought to be talking about treason and bribery. Because the reasons for impeachment are not high crimes and misdemeanors, but treason, bribery, high crimes and misdemeanors. Trouble is that most people have never read the Constitution and have no idea what it says.
What makes me afraid is that Clinton seems to be actively sabotaging our national defense.
I think that's an understatement. In fact, when you hear them talking about, you know, we've cut back 750,000 federal employees, what they don't point out is that 600,000 of those have been from the military.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, meanwhile, Russia still, the former Soviet countries still have 150 divisions, and we've gone down from 27 divisions to 10 in our army. And that is a staggering reality that I don't think has dawned on anyone. Hey, the changes in Russia have been very superficial, have been not what they appeared to be, and that we based a huge downsizing of our defense on this expectation that Russia was becoming a democracy and that our problems were over.
But don't you think a lot of that is the disinformation that the Soviets have been funneling into our intelligence agencies to make us believe that truth was falsehood, falsehood was truth, to give the idea that Russia was so poor, gee, we just got to give them more and more and more money and supplies and technology, because if we don't do that, the bad Russians are going to take over.
You know, Colonel Lunev said something interesting to me when I was with him. He said, "You want to talk about nuclear blackmail?" He says, "What is this business where they say, hey, our economy is collapsing. You better give us money. We're sitting on all these nuclear weapons. They might go off."
Right.
That's nuclear blackmail.
Sure. And for our listeners who don't know, Colonel Lunev, Stanislaus Lunev, was a colonel in the Soviet GRU who defected to America in 1992 and wrote a wonderful book entitled Through the Eyes of the Enemy, which we will be carrying here at Radio Liberty, as well as, of course, Jeff Nyquist's book, and Jeff is our guest, The Fourth World War, and that's an excellent, excellent book. And if you want it, we can you can get that through Radio Liberty. But I think it's vitally important that people understand that there really are people out there who hate America.
In fact, yes.
I had a caller, I didn't have it, but Dave Wilson, who did the program yesterday afternoon, somebody called me and said, "Look, why would the Russians want to attack us and blow up all of our cities? I mean, that wouldn't be productive for them. Wouldn't they rather just have capture all of our cities? Why would they want to blow them up with nuclear bombs?"
There was an old barbarian, a leader in a time of ancient Rome, and he made a statement that's come down to us through history. He said, "There is something within me that makes me want to burn Rome." And I think that this is not an idea that has gone away in the minds of many barbarians in the world.
And, of course, what the analogy would be, we want to destroy America.
That's right.
And, of course, you know, one who has only to study the history of warfare, and, you know, the tragedy is they don't teach our kids in school or even in universities history anymore. Yes. But the story of the Third Punic War, you know, is the story of the final battle between Rome and Carthage. And Carthage made concession after concession after concession and pleaded all they wanted to do was live in peace. And the Romans accepted all of their concessions, and when they sent out their sons and their weapons, but the Romans had one goal, and that was to destroy Carthage. Now, it was a great city. They could have taken the city and left the city intact and set Romans to live in it. But instead of that, after capturing the city and killing every man and every boy and taking every girl and every woman away into slavery, then they simply tore the city down stone by stone by stone, and then plowed salt into the ground so that nothing would ever again grow where once it stood, the great city of Carthage. But those who do not remember history are doomed to repeat it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. And the United States, we have a delusion in this country. We think we're invincible. I wish we were. That would be nice to have that luxury to be invincible. But I'm sorry, we're not. We're just a country like any other. We may be bigger, we may be more advanced than others, but right now our guard is down. Look who we have in the White House here.
And I think one of the points you made in your book, which was so telling to me, is that history records time and time and time again where weaker nations destroyed stronger nations because the weaker nations had the will to win and the stronger nations did not.
Yes, it's interesting, you know. Even in recent history, you take 300 years ago, the contest between Great Britain and France. France had 20 to 25 million people, and the population of England was 3 million. England consistently defeated France. How could this happen? You know,
right.
Go figure.
They had the will to win. We've got Herb on the line. Let's just find out what he wants, and we're going to have to take a break here. But Herb, are you there?
Yeah, I can hang on until after the break.
Okay, if you wouldn't mind, because sure. We'd love to get your question to Jeff. And when we get back, our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when we have to tell you we're listener-supported, and quite frankly, we need your financial support to expand our ministry across America. We're going to be getting onto a station in San Francisco, but we have to be sure that we're going to be able to develop the support there, but in the meantime, we need to get onto other stations. We have the opportunity of getting on, I think about 6 or 8 stations if we... but we'd have to be assured of another $500 or $600 a month in income. Once we have that, we'll go onto those stations. Most of them are in the south and southeast, and we're going to just build a solid base until we can reach across America and let people really begin to hear these stories they're not hearing through most of the regular media. And even many of our conservative commentators really don't understand the invisible government that controls America, and they don't understand the spiritual basis of this battle between the communists and the socialists and the humanists and the various occultic organizations, the Trilateral Commission. How do they all fit together? So few people really understand the true nature of the battle in which we're involved and how it can be that on one hand we're helping communism and yet communism may very well turn and destroy us. And of course, one way to understand that is to understand that behind everything that's going on is God within the shadows, watching and preparing to act. And if you study the Old Testament, you'll find, for instance, that God used the Assyrians to destroy the children of Israel. The wicked Assyrians were used by God to punish the children of Israel that turned against him. America was a Christian nation. In fact, I just came across my copy of the case of the Church of the Holy Trinity versus the United States, and we'll make that available to you if you want to send us a self-addressed stamped envelope. I think maybe we'll put it out in a little pamphlet form and later on charge for it. But if you'd like to get a copy of this United States Supreme Court decision, the Church of the Holy Trinity versus the United States, 1891, where the Supreme Court held America was a Christian nation, and yet that fact and that case has been suppressed. You can talk to the average lawyer. He's never heard of it. Why? Because you're not supposed to know that America was a Christian country and now a post-Christian country and now a pagan country. And how do you think God is going to deal with a nation that has been given so much and yet has turned against him? Is that what this is really all about? I don't know. But I know that throughout history, God has used pagan and evil nations to discipline those who have been in his favor. And then, of course, turned against him. So we hope that you out there in the listening audience will decide you really want to do something. You want to become part of our family. You want to help us because, really, I believe we have a unique message. We have material you can't get any other place in the entire nation. Interviews, tape sets, some of the books we have are just not available elsewhere. We just got the end of the supply of Hitler and the New Age. There are no more available in the country of those than we're going to be having here. And, of course, we get them because we want to make them available to you. And we give you our permission to copy anything that we have. Now, I can't give you permission to copy copyrighted books, but anything we put out, our tapes, our newsletters, we want you to copy because we need to get the word out because time's running out for America. The number to call to join the Radio Liberty family and the suggested a gift to join the Radio Liberty family is $20 a month or more is 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jeff Nyquist. For his book we're talking about is The Origins of the Fourth World War. And if you'd like to find out how to get that and for a suggested gift, why, you can call us at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Jeff, if people would like to get copies of your newsletter, The Final Phase, how would they go about doing that?
They would write to Jeff Nyquist, NYQUIST, at P.O. Box 4931, Eureka, California. That's E-U-R-E-K. And the zip code there is 95502.
Okay.
And send me a check for $30, and that will cover your subscription to the newsletter.
All right. That's J.R. Nyquist, Post Office Box 4931, Eureka, California, 95502. And we're not interested. We don't get nothing at all by telling you about this. But I've just finished reading 4 issues of it. I think it's excellent. It's very well done. And Herb, are you there?
Yes, good evening.
Okay.
I've got a little bit of news that might fit in with the program here, then I also have a question for the guest.
Okay, fine. Is this good news or bad news?
Well, it's just news, period. I gathered this off MSNBC, and it was featured on WorldNet Daily, and it's an article about the Russians have just unveiled a state-of-the-art stealth fighter.
Oh, yes, this is the new one that'll carry, I don't know how many, 16 missiles or something, or six missiles?
It uses thrust vectoring, right, which is a highly efficient way of maneuvering.
And won't this actually outmaneuver our planes?
It's supposed to be the best thing out there.
Right.
But it's really funny, at the end of the article, because this was on MSNBC, there's a little bit of misinformation in the last paragraph. And I'd like to quote it just briefly, if I could. It's just very short.
Sure.
At the bottom of the article, it describes this plane. Then it says that the last sentence is the closing. The Russian military doesn't have enough money to maintain its current fleet of military aircraft or properly trained pilots. And the situation is likely to further deteriorate because of the country's economic crisis.
Do you think that might be a little communist disinformation?
I think it's a lot of disinformation. I don't know where it came from, but it's hard to believe.
But you see, the communists are working here in America today. They're working in our colleges. They're working in our schools. They're working in Sacramento today. The communists have never given up their intention ultimately to win in this battle between socialism and freedom. And, of course, I know some of these people because 36 years ago when I got started in the movement, I knew who they were. They were members of the local communist cells. They're still here. Some of our leading citizens are still here. They're still working for the ultimate destruction of America and the establishment of a one-world socialist state. The trouble is that they've advanced very, very high many times into high positions in government. They work through organizations like the Institute of Policy Studies. We know a great deal of evidence about them because all these files in Russia have now been opened up, and we find out that Joe McCarthy was right. They were at every level of our government. But, of course, the reason that they were successful and allowed to do what they did was because of the influence of the Council on Foreign Relations, which used them, or thought that they could use them, to further their own agenda towards world government. The question is, who is using who?
Yeah, that's something we need to find out yet. My question for the guest is if he could take a brief second and just assess if he knows the state of readiness of the Russian military as far as offensive operations. And I'll take my question off the air.
Okay, thanks very much, Herb.
Good night.
What do we really know? We get all the propaganda that's published in our left-leaning publications telling us that the Chinese, Russian army is just starving to death, morale's low, they're just no good, they don't have enough personnel to manage their airplanes, they can't keep up the maintenance on them. Is that really true, or is this simply a part of the program to make America believe that we have nothing to worry about?
Well, that's actually true about our military, all those things.
Well, I know it's true about our military,
yeah.
But what about the Russian military? Do we really know what's going on?
Like we said before, they've got a new mobile ICBM. They've got a whole bunch of new mobile ICBMs. We just haven't been following it very well. They've got a huge army. They've got a new fighter, this gentleman just pointed out. I saw that on the MSNBC as well. They've got new quieter submarines.
Now tell us about those submarines, because those submarines can be right off the coast here lobbing their missiles, or either nuclear missiles or their various cruise missiles,
yes,
onto our coast towns.
Yes.
Aren't they still in full production for nuclear submarines?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, they are. They're producing, my understanding is they produce a submarine a month.
No, but are these missile submarines or are these attack submarines?
Not all submarines are ballistic missile. Some are attack submarines, which are used to hunt our ballistic missile submarines. They have a very large submarine fleet, over 100 submarines.
How many do we have?
Well, we have 18 ballistic missile submarines. I think we have a similar number of attack submarines.
So they got us about 2-1?
Well, they have us almost 3-1 in ballistic missile submarines. We have 18 and they have 42. In attack submarines, we have a slightly better ratio, but I forget what the exact U.S. figure is, but it's something like 20 to 25.
Well, of course, the rationale has always been if we just had one submarine that escaped in case of a nuclear war, why, we could launch those missiles and do so much damage to Russia that the Russians would never consider a nuclear war. Is that accurate? Number one, can our commanders actually launch their missiles without orders from Bill Clinton? Two, would Bill Clinton ever give such an order?
Yeah.
And three, if they did launch their missiles, how many of them would get through all the anti-ballistic missiles that the Russians have?
In a real nuclear war, Bill Clinton would be dead in the first 3 minutes. So he wouldn't be able to give anybody any order. The first person to die in a nuclear war is the president. And the Russians would make sure. How can, you know, I have the statement in my book. I say, America is a country that cannot castle its king. Our president is a public leader. He appears in public all the time. That makes him a target. I mean, people talk about him being a target to assassins, you know, nutty people with guns. But a ballistic missile submarine, or a Russian cruise missile, or ballistic missile can hit him so quick, or Spetsnaz commandos can take him out at the very beginning of a nuclear war, and he would never be able to relay the codes to our submarines. Right now, he's established permissive action links to the submarines so that the submarine commanders cannot fire the nuclear missiles on their own. You have to enter a code into the computer on the submarine to get the missile to fire. And if you don't have the right code, if you enter the wrong code more than a couple times, it'll dump the warhead and it'll destroy it. And so launching without the code is as difficult as doing removing the tonsils through the wrong end. You know, that was the phrase that one expert used. You really can't do it. So it's possible that our ballistic missile submarines are not going to be able to launch their missiles. Now, even if they did, the Russian Federation has 10 to 12,000 ABMs surrounding its country with many battle management radars, 18 battle management radars.
That's anti-ballistic missiles. In other words, that's a missile that'll bring down incoming ballistic missiles.
They have a Star Wars defense, a serious defense, and now they're going to be, they have this mirror that they've been experimenting with on the Mir. And this mirror, they're supposedly going to launch this larger satellite, and supposedly it can generate a light source 10 times brighter than the full moon.
And, of course, this will be so that they'll have light, but over their cities, at least that's what they say. But does it have a military application?
Oh, it's absolutely ridiculous that they care about whether their Siberian cities are lit
at nighttime, right.
I mean, there's two possibilities. This is to light battlefields so their troops can see better at night, or it is a directed energy weapon. It is a kind of Star Wars weapon.
Now you're talking about something like an ELF...
A microwave, laser, particle beam, who knows what it is.
Mm-hmm. But how can a country that's so poor that we've got to keep giving them money be putting up these sophisticated weapons?
Oh, we're paying for it.
And I think that's what the American people really need to understand, is we have the best enemy that money can buy, and yet that's exactly what Carthage did to Rome. Carthage would do anything, make any concession, give as much money as the Romans wanted, just leave us alone, let us live in peace.
Yeah.
But Carthage had lost the will to win.
Yeah, when you care more about your furniture and your car and your fancy house than you do about your country's independence and its strength, you're in trouble.
And you know, another thing was that the Carthaginians, I've read, actually had child sacrifice. And of course, if you look at this thing from a spiritual point of view, we have child sacrifice in America too. Mm-hmm. And I don't think God's going to be very well pleased with America. I think he's going to look at our people and say they've been tried and found wanting.
Yeah. So to answer that gentleman's question, with all the weapon, every category of weapons they've been developing, or we have stopped, they have been modernizing, they have been advancing, making rapid strides. So I would say the capability, my feeling, despite what some experts would say, my feeling is that they have a strong offensive capability. And more than that, with their new alliance with China, China having the largest military in the world now, this alliance between Russia and China, the first and second largest military establishments on Earth, this alliance would absolutely defeat us in a war.
And, of course, most Americans do not know that, first of all, that the so-called break between Russia and China that came about, I think, about 1966 was phony to begin with, according to Anatoly Golitsyn, who was, I think he was a major in the KGB who defected to America and said this is all part of a long-range plan of deception so that you stupid Americans will give money to the Russians thinking you're playing against the Chinese and money to the Chinese so you think you're playing them off against the Russians. Yeah. And actually, of course, both of them are using your money to build up the weapons of war that will destroy you. But now they've even given up all semblance of a break between Russia and China. And what's really happening there? Because I think it's so vitally important that the average American understands that while we think that the world is living at peace, the Russians and the Chinese now are joining together into the mightiest military force in all history.
Yeah, the two alarming developments here are that, and Colonel Lunev told me one of these, Colonel Lunev says that their military staffs are joined. They've created a liaison for an actual military alliance. And the other thing is that their intelligence, they share all their military and political intelligence, which is staggering because they've both got highly efficient intelligence services. As we read in our papers about the Clinton administration's involvement with the Chinese.
Well, now, one of the things you talked about in your newsletter was the fact that when we ship the Russians these various types of sophisticated computers, we also put trap doors in so we could monitor what these computers were being used for.
Yes.
What's the background of that? And once we get through that, I'm going to ask what the implications of Y2K are for Russia and China and, of course, for the United States. But what about all these sophisticated computers, these battlefield computers we've been giving them?
Well, as you know, when we, probably you've heard this, what we did to Saddam Hussein before the Gulf War is we sold him his computers. And, of course, we put bugs and things into those computers so that if he ever used his weapons against us, those bugs would react against him. And, of course, this was how come we didn't lose any significant numbers of... I'm not sure we lost any planes in the Gulf War, very few aircraft.
Well, we did. I know they had at least one pilot that was a woman pilot that they shot down. So
Yeah, it was very few, and I think that this was a great coup that, whenever the Russians and Chinese, they would rather steal our computers because then they would be getting a computer that wasn't fixed up by the CIA or by the National Security Agency to basically mess them up. So they do have a problem in that area. But, this is standard procedure. The CIA... and the military use are best at these electronic kind of games. This is where we've had the leading edge for a long time, and using satellites and so on. But really, my personal feeling is that human intelligence is the most important, because politics and high policy and statesmanship is more important than the tactical battlefield question. If you lack good counterintelligence in preventing the enemy from knowing what's going on inside your high councils, every one of your secrets is going to the enemy. He can anticipate you. He can know your intentions. He can play a flawless chess game. Whereas you on your side, you're blind. You can't see what he's doing. You don't know his strengths. Human intelligence gives us all these things. I mean, there's only so much a satellite in space can see.
Well, of course, the Soviets have infiltrated our CIA. They've done this for many years. When Golitsyn came over, he talked about this, and then we find out that the head of American counterintelligence was actually a Soviet agent. And how many other agents there are at the highest echelons of our CIA, and what was really so frightening is they didn't even seem very interested in finding. Was that Aldrich Ames who was the head of the counterintelligence?
No, Aldrich Ames was the highest he ever went is he was in charge at one time briefly of the Czechoslovak division.
Well, who was the fellow who was at the who was the head of our counterintelligence?
Well, that was James Angleton, but he wasn't a KGB agent.
No, it wasn't. But there was somebody recently that they picked up in New York.
They'd been
watching him for 10 years, and the CIA never even found out he was a mole. I think the FBI tracked him down.
You're talking about Nicholson. The FBI always finds them. The CIA never does.
Right. And isn't it interesting? The CIA never finds the spies working for the spy agency.
Right. The other big CIA mole was Nicholson, and he was at the time of his arrest, he was training our CIA, new CIA officers. And he was making lists of them and sending them directly to Moscow.
Right.
So that was the other fellow. But the significant moles that we've discovered in the West here, the most significant have been in Britain. Kim Philby, for example, who was the head of the Soviet division of MI6 at one time, and also Sir Roger Hollis, who was the head of MI5, that's the British Secret Service. It's thought by people who've really looked into this that he was... He was a Soviet mole. In fact, Peter Wright, in his book Spycatcher, which came out in the 80s, sent a huge chill through England and was a tremendous scandal. In fact, the book was banned in England. Margaret Thatcher banned the book. And Peter Wright was the deputy director of the British Secret Service. He said basically that his boss, Sir Roger Hollis, was a Soviet mole.
Sure, and of course Burgess and Meredith, and I think the people at the upper echelons were just covering for all these people down below.
They let
Burgess and Meredith all get away.
McLean, Blunt, Philby, these were the Cambridge moles, the famous Cambridge moles.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about Sir Roger Hollis is he came from Oxford, and that was a funny thing, and they thought, you know, Oxford's immune. But no, I mean, the Marxist influence exists in both major universities in England, and it has had a very corruptive effect. What's interesting is these people, some of them come from very aristocratic background, and this is a curious thing.
Well, people find it very difficult to believe that wealthy people would be communists, but certainly Armin Hammer, one of the wealthiest men in America, was a Soviet agent. He certainly was working hand in glove.
Actually was an actual agent of the Soviet Union.
Right. Yeah. And he was, that's brought out in a book by Epstein, I believe it's called Dossier.
Yes.
And incidentally, I tried to get either a review copy of that or to get an interview with Epstein. There was just no way. Either the publisher wanted to get that book out. There was one printing and that was the end of it.
Yeah, it's very funny that the way the publishing industry reacts and to some of these things. It's like, you know, Golitsyn's book, New Lies for Old, in 84, Dodd and Mead put that out. That was the last book Dodd and Mead ever did.
Right.
Publishing house had been around forever.
In fact, there's this new book out, The Day of the Rat, and I have called Regnery at least 5 times trying to get a review copy and get an interview. And
oh, The Year of the Rat.
Right.
Yeah,
that, of course, goes into the transfer of technology to the Chinese communists.
Yes.
That's just hot off the press, and all I can say is the public relations people working for Regnery don't seem to be very interested at all in getting that book distributed. I wonder why.
I wonder who's over there. Well, they rejected my book.
Right.
So, I don't know. They said it would never fly.
Right, of course. Well, anyway, our telephone number 464-8295 or out across America 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And we're talking with Jeff Nyquist. And we're talking about his book, The Origins of the Fourth World War. And we were simply talking about some of the various issues that are involved. As far as the Chinese communists are concerned. The Chinese communists now, I understand, have bought their second aircraft carrier.
Well, yeah, they bought an aircraft carrier through a third party, very sneaky, and it's a Russian aircraft carrier.
Right. Well, they already had one, I thought, and then they got a second one they were supposed to kind of use just sort of for entertainment or something, but it's much, much more modern than many of our aircraft carriers.
Yeah, it's a super carrier. The Russian military doctrine doesn't make use of them. Of course, the Chinese are, their main ocean is the Pacific.
Right.
You really need aircraft carriers in the Pacific Ocean because it's so big. And there aren't a lot of, in the Atlantic, most of your planes can reach any position at sea. But in the Pacific, it's more difficult to get your aircraft everywhere you want them to be. So aircraft carriers are important if you want to expand your power across the Pacific into the Americas.
But, of course, if the Chinese communists now have... Now, do you count two aircraft carriers or one? My understanding was that they got a second one.
I don't believe they have any that are operational right now. They might have one that's operational. Their Navy, they've been building their Blue Water Navy, mm-hmm. and it's hard to keep up on it. The changes are so fast.
And, of course, the thing is that we get so much frank communist disinformation published here in the United States to confuse the American people so they can't think effectively what's going on. And we've got Mike on the line. Hi, Mike. Do you have a question or comment?
A question for Mr. Nyquist. If he knows anything about the Sea Launch Commander and the Odyssey, I wondered about that. Back when you were talking about collaboration between the Soviet or the Russians and the Chinese.
Are you talking about this thing that they're going to put the satellites up off our coast? Is that Sea Launch?
Well, it's an ocean-based rocket launching platform.
Okay. Do you know anything at all about that, Jeff?
No.
This is the thing that they were going to be towing out. They were going to keep it in Long Beach, and they were going to then tow it out to sea, and they were going to be doing a rocket launching from the Pacific and using the Sea Launch. And that was a combined effort by Boeing and the Chinese communists, as I remember, wasn't
it? This one was built in St. Petersburg, Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Collaboration between Boeing and the Russians. But the thing is, its home port is described as a port. Well, it's in the Long Beach port, former Navy property. They call it.
Right.
That's been bumped. Long Beach is the local citizens prevented that from being used by the Russians or Chinese.
Well, they've been trying.
No, they actually did. They stopped it.
Well then, okay, the last thing I heard on that was the Chinese were looking at another spot a couple miles away in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh, yeah. Well, if you don't succeed,
try again. Right.
Yeah.
Well, additionally, they might have just decided to look nice and for Costco, and for them to move out of that whole prospect to make way for the Odyssey.
Now, what's the Odyssey? Now,
that's the platform.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually not towed. It's a self-propelled conversion from a North Sea oil drilling rig. They call it a semi-submersible launch platform. That's how it gets its stability.
What is its capability supposed to be?
Well, it's a rocket launching platform.
It would be putting up satellites. It would be putting satellites into space.
Satellites.
What they say.
Yeah, that's what they say. You know, it's interesting. Did you know that last summer the Russians launched the first satellite from a ballistic missile submarine? It was a joint project with the Germans. The Germans gave them, I would assume, a lot of their rocket technology. The Russians acquired.
But, of course, the Germans got a satellite up in the sky.
Yeah, that was the trade-off.
Right. Well, of course, those missiles may very well one day come home on German cities. But before they do, of course, they'll attack American cities. Right now, we're going to have to take a break. And when we get back, I want to ask you about Y2K, how it's going to impact on the American military, how it's going to impact on the Russian and Chinese military. Mike, you want to hang on or not?
Yeah, a couple points left.
Okay, fine. So we're going to have to take a quick break here so we can do our station ID, and then we'll be back here with the last hour of Radio Liberty. And give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY.